This is the Formation Lab.
Welcome one, welcome all to the now at-home experience known as the Formation Lab for... Tim, this was a phenomenal weekend. We got some bad news in terms of the goings on here in St. Louis, but you know what? It was a total positive. I'm Luke. I'm talking to Tim. I've already addressed Tim. Tim, how you doing?
Yes, you have. I'm here. I'm hanging in there. But this is entertainment in the time of coronavirus.
Yeah, so. Perhaps we were too hasty in stopping our pandemic cast episodes.
We were a bit premature, but we took all COVID precautions, I'd like to say, and brag on the fact that the Formation Lab has a 0% infection rate because we take all precautions, because we enjoy science. Shocker from the motorsport guys.
Yeah, so let's get that right out of the way first. St. Louis, where we're recording, is going into another lockdown phase, which is happening not just in St. Louis, but all over the world. Countries in a lot of places are going to another lockdown. And we're no different. We didn't record last week because last week was my last week of doing drag racing announcing. And I lost my voice because I did a lot of it. And then we're recording at home. So please don't put your tinfoil hats on until we tell you, because I promise you we're just recording at home because of restrictions in place where we live. Neither of us got the coronavirus. So,
no, neither of us have it. We've taken all precautions. And yeah, Luke just was screaming his head off for 48 straight hours. So to make him come in and record a podcast when he sounded like a 16-pack a day smoker just sounded cruel.
Yeah, yeah. It wasn't 48 hours. All right, I'm going to be straight with you guys. It was only about 18 hours over the course of 36. So, but yeah.
Yeah, this is better.
But yeah, so we're at home, recording at home. Hopefully this, I feel like we have a new setup to where we can get some better audio quality. Tim has a mic coming in, and we're here to talk about the Grand Prix in Turkey this week in Formula One. Is one that I feel like I'm going to look back in like a decade and be like, what were some of the high points of being a Formula One fan? And this weekend is going to like jump to the forefront of my mind. Do you ever get that?
I did from the very get-go when you could see that everybody was having trouble. You know, we've made no bones about it on this show. We do not like Herman Tilke and his designs of racetracks. But a broken clock is right twice a day. Mm-hmm. And he made the one in Istanbul gorgeous. It had a lot to do with the natural elevation of the track and the plot they had for it. You know, whereas in Kota, for example, they had to do it artificially, which led to all sorts of, terrible things. But this particular one has natural elevation, something that Luke and I really, really like. And it has just a wonderful flow to it. There's just something about that Turn 8 complex that's, just you're on edge. You're, seeing the very edge of grip that is absolutely able to be had in the world. So it's very, very cool to see. So going in, Luke and I knew, and you can go back and, fact check me if you want, but we talked extensively about how we were excited for this track. Again, Herman Tilke Drome, it's not always the greatest, but this one we really like. And 10 days beforehand, the organizers had it resurfaced. This can be an issue. And personally, Luke, I know that it caused a lot of people to whinge about it, but I'm kind of happy that they did, because the opposite would have happened. It would have been like the last time we were at Coda and, the bumps, you could like skateboard off of them and do some Tony Hawk type stuff off the bumps, that because Coda needed to be repaved. Mm-hmm. And, they were grinding down parts of the asphalt so that it wouldn't, send the cars up high and just send them into the air. Very famously in Drive to Survive on Netflix, Sebastian Vettel had a suspension failure because of those bumps.
Yep.
So I would rather them have this resurface where they have a very low amount of grip. Now, with the low amount of grip, it's because in the tar, and when they do a tarmac for a racing surface, there is a lot of resin type substances that they use to add longevity to it and make it a grippier surface. But sometimes it doesn't always take right away. And especially this, it was like day 10 after they had laid it. So no cars had run on it. They were running rental cars on Friday night. Like, what?
Yeah, they so drivers actually encouraged, I think it was Roman Grosjeans who said, like, hey, we should do this. But yeah, any rental car in the area, they just had people just logging laps trying to put any sort of rubber down on this track. Because like you said, they have this resin in that is very slick. And usually when you repave a track, like when we repaved at Worldwide Technology Raceway, we repaved, but we repaved months before IndyCar came. And even then, when IndyCar came, it was like, all right, well, this is a year where there's a little asterisk because of a repave. But yeah, you have to lay down all of that. And then the other thing too is there are little bits of rock and gravel mixed into this asphalt, right? And over time, those get set in, they get broke, they get kind of shuffled around mostly. But when they're fresh like that, it can cause even less grip, right? Because they haven't settled into the place where they should yet. So they're running, you know, desperately trying to put down any sort of rubber on this track. And Tim, what happens? Probably the most rare thing that could happen in the F1 anime, the F1 manga, is rain actually happens when they say it's going to happen. And just like that, all the work of, oh, we got rubber down on the track. No, you don't. No.
Yeah. They didn't have the benefit of the pre-F1, like the F2 races, the staging races and things like that to put rubber down for them. So they had rental cars and they finally get it. And yes, the racing gods decided to treat us to not only a brand new surface, but a wet one. And personally for me, Luke, you know, and I know that you and I talked about it a lot, this was to me the great equalizer. Mm-hmm. This was it neutralized really a lot of downforce and a lot of the, you know, kind of tech advantages that a lot of, you know, cars have and a lot of teams have. And it really exposed how well you built the chassis, which is why we saw Red Bull at the top of the timing sheets all weekend long until, you know, qualifying and the race itself.
Until the two times it matters.
Until the two, yeah, they were really doing well. And honestly, I don't think it's down to the chassis being bad. I think it's the other thing that was exposed.
Well, that's a hot take for drivers, later in the review.
That is. But it really put an emphasis on the driver's racecraft and skill.
And here's the thing is, as we go forward, we like to dunk on drivers sometimes, as I think any critic or any fan or anybody would like to do. Do not mistake a spin this week for a lack of racecraft is one thing I'll ask all of our listeners to do. When you spin in conditions like this, this is literal. This isn't just rain, all right? Remember, there's no grip on the tarmac. So even if it was dry, it's already going to be spinning, right? There's no
correct
place where you're getting grip this entire 58 laps on this race. So I'll ask listeners to put aside the, well, if you spin, it's because it was a mistake. Not necessarily a mistake you made sometimes. Other times, yes. But yeah, it was
correct.
It was brilliant. And it was the great equalizer. I love seeing a rain race. The only thing I didn't like, Tim, and this is going to shift right into the qualification talks, is the safety that kind of got exposed, brought to the forefront.
That I am going to agree with Sebastian Vettel. Mm-hmm. In his post-race interview. That's a no excuses. Yeah.
So, Tim, you were much more into Formula One when the incident happened. Actually, you know, let's rewind and talk about what actually did happen. Tim, you want to break it down about what we're actually referring to?
So what we're referring to is an incident that occurred in 2014 with the young driver Jules Bianchi. It was a wet race. I cannot recall off the top of my head where the track was, and that is an utter
sin. It was a wet race in Japan, actually.
It was in Japan. It was at Suzuka. And which is all the more gutting because the stewards there and the fans there are just honestly, they're second to none. They are. It is a wonderful place to race. Unfortunately, what happened was a safety car was brought out. The conditions were far too wet. The time should have been called, and the session, I believe, had been started to be red flagged, but the cars were still out. And before the cars had stopped, a crane was brought out to extract a car from the gravel pit. Unfortunately, Jules Bianchi was unable to stop his car from hydroplaning into the back of the crane, which caused massive head trauma and ultimately caused his death. So anytime anybody mentions rain and a crane, there had best not be cars on track. And unfortunately, that did happen at qualifying in Q2 specifically.
Yeah, so it was actually his double yellow flags, which is even more dangerous than the safety car.
That should have been a red flag.
His double yellow flags, which means that in other places on the track, it was green. And ever since then, there's been a very tangible sting. I won't say all deaths in motorsport are preventable, but most are. And this is a very preventable incident. So ever since, there's been a very harsh sting to a yellow flag or anytime a crane is out on track. You just don't race. Like, hard stop. If there's a crane out, you don't even risk it. Halfway across the track, you know, on the other side of the track, you're not green. But during qualifications, someone went off, and feel free to correct me for who went off here. But they went off at the end of, I want to say it was Q1 or Q2, and when they started,
it was,
go ahead.
It was Nicholas Latifi at the, specifically at the turn mm-hmm. 8 complex, which again, high speed, tough, no grip, it was at the end of Q1 that happened. Double yellow flags were waved. And before they started Q2, they were told that the crane had been removed from the track. And it was not. So honestly, race control is to blame for this. I mean, there should be a zero tolerance policy.
Well, and
this
isn't even people stretching either. Sometimes it's stretching to say this is a shame. This is literally the exact same incident. Jules Bianchi died out the outside of Dunlop Curve in Suzuka, which is a high-speed turn, right? There's no reason.
The similarities are way too eerie.
And I'll be honest, there was less grip today, or not today, on Sunday, than there was at Suzuka on that fateful day. So for that, the similarities there were way too much, and I tweeted out, like, there's a red flag going off in my mind when that happened. So that kind of put a pall over the weekend, but if anything, the FIA is lucky that the race wasn't a snoozer, because honestly, I think we all pretty much forgot about that by the time the checkered flag waved on Sunday.
Yeah, we had all kind of forgotten about that, but
we shouldn't.
Honestly, race control should be held to account for that. The FIA should take a very strong stance on that immediately. And, you know, I know Massey was trying to, you know, equivocate and say, oh, well, we were told, and he's defending his guys. I get it. But that is a bridge too far. That is way too eerily close. And yeah, like you said, no grip. So no, but Q3, you know, kind of got things back underway because it was a little weird.
Q3 was, oh boy. So let's start at the front. All right. Because this is the biggest story, right? Lance Stroll somehow popped on in Q3 with a 147.76, and nabbed position number one? What?
He somehow pipped, and this incensed Max Verstappen of Red Bull.
Yes, it did.
Because Max Verstappen had been lighting up the timing sheets. He was like two or three seconds clear. I think it was maybe two. In Q1 and Q2, it looked like no one was
touching. Just for reference, by the way, in Q3 alone, Verstappen was 1.3 ahead of Perez.
Correct. And so you expected to see a Max Verstappen pole position. And so Max tried to get back out. He couldn't set a faster lap than our own Lance Stroll. So I think that, ladies and gentlemen, we will be taking the first of a couple moments on this episode to eat crow and say, you know what? Lance has some talent in the wet. He's proven it time and again that wet weather is his thing.
It really has.
So, doggone it. Anyway, gonna have to eat humble pie on that one. But he's had some really crummy results. He needed a turnaround for his season. You know, he was caught lying to the press. He broke COVID protocols. He got COVID because he doesn't listen to science like us here on the Formation Lab podcast.
Recording from home.
And that's correct. But it, he did a great job, and he did pip Sergio Perez as well, who actually also had a pretty good race day.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, it proved, and I mean, interestingly, the Mercedes could only qualify sixth and seventh. So the 2019 Mercedes did better than the 2020
That's
Mercedes.
True. And this is something to come back to later, by the way, when we're talking about the race itself, is remember that Mercedes did not have the car that dominated all throughout the weekend. They did not have the car that dominated in qualifying. They were a midfield car by the end of qualifying. Not even by the end. They're a midfield car throughout most of qualifying, honestly.
Right. Most of it. But yeah, interesting setup for the race.
I also want to point out one other qualification little thing.
Yeah,
I'm looking here at number four at a 1:54.48. Why, that's Alex Albon, about, let's see, 0.7 off the pole position.
Gotta say, Albon had a good weekend. And here's the other thing.
Or, excuse me, not 0.7 off. He's more than 3 seconds off. I did my math entirely wrong. But anyway,
I will let you fix that in the
I'm not
going
to edit it. We're doing this on my laptop at home, not from our recording studio. So minimal edits today. But
gotcha.
Albon was 3 seconds off. But the point stands. Yeah. He finished P4 at a very respectable 1:50.
He out-qualified the greatest qualifier of all time, mm-hmm. in Lewis Hamilton. There is, mathematically speaking, you cannot argue that Lewis Hamilton is the greatest qualifying F1 driver or driver in, mm-hmm. the world ever. So good on him. It was a great thing for Alex Albon. But the other thing I wanted to say that this exposed this weekend was also, if you could keep your head cool and if you could make sure that you didn't lose it out there and get, really frustrated and all that, Alex Albon was, cool as a cucumber. That guy was, he had ice in his veins. It
was
awesome.
He was icy like Raikkonen and 2 seconds faster than Raikkonen. So.
dang. He did a really, really great job. But yeah, but that kind of sets the stage. We won't go into where everybody else qualified. It was all just kind of a crazy thing.
It was a
mishmash. Although it would be, it was a mishmash. I will say the other interesting thing from qualifying is that Sebastian Vettel qualified 11th. Better than he has the last few weekends.
12th. Lando Norris in 11th.
12th.
Yeah.
Lando Norris in 11th. So that was interesting. But that kind of sets the stage for Sunday. Sunday, I think they had given it even odds at raining, and it did rain. Thank you again, racing gods.
Yeah, it was 50-50, which, if you're familiar with the F1 manga, means that it's not going to happen.
Correct.
But I wasn't expecting rain. I was expecting a dry race, but I came in expecting kind of a spinny dry race, if that makes sense, because we already knew that the track, dry as a bone, right, has no grip. Which, by the way, speaking of dry as a bone, it was really weird to see Istanbul Park with pitch black surface and green grass growing around it, wasn't it? It's like, what is this place?
These are weird times.
It's like when somebody visits Sonoma Raceway in spring and it's all green and it's like, no. But anyway, yeah, I was expecting a spinny race. I was not expecting that.
No, No, was not expecting it to go the way it went. But as is our want, would you like to start at the back of the grid?
Yes, Tim, would you like to explain what back of the grid means on our podcast?
I would. Ladies and gentlemen, Martin Brundle for the Sky F1 sports team does what he calls a grid walk, Martin's grid walk, where he goes from the front of the pack to the back. The front qualifiers all the way to the back qualifiers. We decided we're going to flip it and go back to front. So we're going to go from whoever finished last, and to qualify for that, you have to have either had a failure and finished your race first, finished up your weekend, a crash, something of that nature. If it's a Mercedes or anything like that, we'll talk about
and
you
we'll
then.
We'll talk about you
but
and
whoever,
your teammate.
That's correct. We'll knock out the whole thing. So that is as we go forward. But this week, we had to find ourselves with Antonio Giovinazzi, who I believe he crashed before
he
the race started.
He did.
So I don't know. It qualifies. It's race day. Enough grip to trip up a guy before you get to the grid.
So he wrecked to start the race, and I didn't quite see because right around lap 18, which is when the cameras were very focused on Max Verstappen spinning. So in my notes, I don't have whatever he retired from, and I Googled and I couldn't find it. So if you know how Antonio Giovinazzi retired, tweet us at FormationLap101, at TimSTLF1. But Kimi Raikkonen and Antonio Giovinazzi both had Sundays forget. Giovinazzi, like we said, he bent it in the warm-up lap. He was not the only one to do it. And again, these are Antonio Giovinazzi, you can say whatever you want about talent in F1 realm, but statistically, he's top 1% driver in the world, right? And every single one of these guys are top 1 or the top 0.1% of drivers in the world, and everybody else is having trouble. So I'm going to do maybe not a faultless blame, but I'm not going to dog on him for bidding it. Did you see the track again? Especially if...
And he wasn't the only one to go a little spinny before things got started. One of the great hopes of the future of Formula One also had an off before he got to the grid. So one George Russell. But he actually finished the race. But let's talk about Alfa Romeo because, honestly, not a whole lot to talk about.
What I'm gonna get at is fault or no fault for Antonio Giovinazzi? Neither him or Kimi had the car to do anything, right? Kimi followed up a P8 in qualifying with P15, and Giovinazzi just retired on lap 18 for the first DNF, which, by the way, side note, how shocked were you that it took until lap 18 to get our first did not finish?
I was actually kind of shocked. You know what else I was shocked by?
No
safety
cars either.
There was a VSC for like a lap or two, but no safety cars, no red flags. With the tarmac the way it was, and with the rain, I fully expected pure
this
carnage.
This was on at 4 a.m. our time. I expected to be up at 10 o'clock watching this, but I don't know how they kept it clean, but I was shocked that Antonio Giovinazzi came in to retire. He came in through the pits to retire. Not much else to talk about Alfa Romeo. They straight up didn't have the pace. They did not have the pace to compete in this race all too much. And Kimi Raikkonen, being a very experienced driver and has raced in conditions not quite as bad, but bad conditions like this, finishing P15 should be all the statement you need for how weak this Alfa was this weekend.
Yes, it was quite not good.
Not great.
But not great. But that brings us to the next team, which the next DNFer was one Nicholas Latifi. Would you like to start this off?
Yeah, so Nicholas Latifi ran kind of an anonymous race up until lap 39, where he spun and he brought out, I think, double yellows or just a yellow in sector, I think it was one where he spun out, right? Corner five. He spun on lap 39, and then he collided with Romain Grosjean a couple laps later, and they just brought him right in. Again, I really don't think that the Williams had the pace this weekend. And as talented as Russell is, and as talented as Latifi is, Tim, I know both you and I, we don't like the pay driver system. but Nicholas Latifi is a talented enough driver to be in Formula One, pay or not, or at least have a shot, right?
He is not nearly as egregiously bad as some of the pay drivers flagged off.
So I think that Russell and also Latifi, I don't think the Williams had the pace to do phenomenally this weekend, but I will also say that their inexperience hurt them a lot this weekend. Because how often has George Russell actually had to, you know, race? First off, he's racing at a track he doesn't even know, right? But to race in any sort of heavy weather conditions like that in a Formula One car, because let me tell you, for his entire career, the past few years, the story has been, well, it never rains at F1, right? And in a low grip condition, rain or no rain, like Istanbul Park was. So this, I think you can just chalk into Williams' entire weekend up to, this is what you get when you have two of the most inexperienced drivers on the grid. Not that that's necessarily a bad thing to have that, but this is the price you pay.
This is what happens, unfortunately. But his compatriot, George Russell, did go off beforehand and then had a very anonymous race.
Yeah, a P16, only behind I think, Kimi Raikkonen. He's the only guy behind Kimi Raikkonen, I think, that finished. But, you know, again, George Russell, like we were talking with Latifi, George Russell's not very experienced in rain F1 conditions either.
Not in conditions like this where, you know, just miles underneath you are kind of what you need to survive it.
And I think we saw that on the podium, by the way. No coincidence that the three of the four most, you know, veteran drivers are on the podium right now. That's not a coincidence.
Correct. Not a coincidence at all. And they're also, weirdly, mm-hmm. the tire whisperers. The guys that can make their tires stretch longer than they
George Russell doesn't have that yet because he's so green.
No.
And I know it's, his second year, right? But
it's his second full year. It's, you know, it is what it is. Sophomore. You know, and they have to get their, they have to cut their teeth somehow. So, you know, it was unexpected to see. You know what else wasn't unexpected to see? That neither Haas finished.
Oh, I hated neither to one. See that. So a double DNF from Magnussen and Grosjean. Just a very, very disappointing weekend for the bunch of vankers. And I said, coming into this podcast, I said earlier on this podcast, we're not faulting drivers for spins and DNFs. Because, again, did you see the sheet of ice they're driving on?
Yes, there is one driver I will fault for some of his.
Yeah, we'll get to that later. I don't want this to be the look at Haas and look
we're
at
not gonna
you
be...
know if you want to slag off Grosjean, go slag him off any other of the races in 2020, but leave him alone for this one because every driver we're going to talk about today, with the exception of the greatest driver of all time, spun today or this weekend at some point.
Yes, they did. And but there was one, I'm sorry, and this is taking a bit of a detour. There was one suspicious lap.
Yes, I had the exact same thought as I said that line.
Yeah, one guy suspiciously did not spin at all this weekend, and we'll get to him in a little bit, but that was one Sebastian.
How that happened?
I don't know. Not once this weekend did I ever see someone say, and he spun, which is the thing we automatically assume if they say someone has spun.
Sebastian Vettel must just be like the ultimate contrarian, right? Where it's like, I won four titles in a row. What's that? You expect me to win a fifth? Nah. What's that? You expect me to be like just cool as a cucumber here in Ferrari? Nah, we're gonna spin it. What's that? You want me to spin it because everybody's spinning it this weekend? Oh, guess who's cool as a cucumber?
No.
Oh, man.
That guy.
We brought up the GOAT.
But anyway.
Yeah, we brought up the GOAT earlier. Let's move on to Mercedes.
Yes. Let's go move on to Mercedes, where I believe there's a weird review, Luke.
Weird review, yeah.
Yes, there is a weird review. Currently, the country of Finland is re-examining the citizenship of Valtteri Bottas, because some of those spins were his
fault. Yeah, they were looking in, they're like, if you can't drive on ice, are you really Finnish? As I believe the words I heard, it's currently caught up in the court system. I believe he's going to have to pay a fine and spend a month with a polar bear to atone for his sins. But it's not the only review that's happening with the Mercedes either, honestly. Lewis Hamilton back in the news sector on the back end. We're going to talk about a little bit of news of him going through a review, which I think Tim and I are excited about. Yes. Valtteri Bottas won spun six. I think it was six, might have been seven, honestly.
I think I'll give him seven just because it was a lot. It was a wildly uncharacteristically bad day for Valtteri Bottas. He has to be mentally buried at this point. There is just absolutely no way that that this doesn't just finish him for the year. And mentally speaking, I can't imagine just how big a toll this is taking on him. To have spun that much was extraordinary. I just feel bad. I genuinely think that of anybody on the grid, Bottas is going to be the one to take it to him. I think he's unduly maligned a lot. On his day, he can pip Lewis Hamilton at what Hamilton is at best, which is qualifying. And then, he can take team orders. He can, be a good teammate, and he can win races by 30 plus seconds like we saw in Australia last year. So, it's just one of those things, unfortunately. It was just a really bad weekend for him, and it was made all the more horrible by the fact that not only was he beaten by his teammate who went on to win the race, he got Verstappen'd.
He got lapped, lapped by a non-trivial margin. He was not just lapped. He was 1, 2, 3. He was 4 guys back of being lapped, which is nuts. Yeah, he got Verstappen. He got dunked on. He's the first guy to admit that race was a disaster. Yeah. And while I will say, I will agree, you can't spin 6 times and none of it's your fault. That's just... And as bad as the car setup may have been, guess who has a word in dictating how the car is set up? You.
Just a brutally bad day for
Valtteri. He seemed
Valtteri,
to take it like a champ, though. And I respect
honestly,
that.
He did. He took it. He took it well. He took it in stride, and he took it on the chin. He said, "Yeah, some
I have
my
his.
Fault. I get it."
I have his.
I like
his
that
Twitter
humility.
Up right here. quote: That race was a disaster. Live and learn.
that was classy, but it was upstaged as bad news for a team goes. By what I think, Luke, you and I can only describe as a signature champion drive from one Lewis Hamilton. Nothing went right for Mercedes all weekend long. They were off on the timing. They couldn't get temperature in the tires. They couldn't get their downforce. They couldn't – nothing that Mercedes is good at, they could get going. And through just the relentless work of the crews and the engineers to get more out of it, and just an inspired signature drive from Lewis, he puts it on the top step of the podium.
From sixth place. Here's the thing. Regardless of your opinion on Lewis Hamilton, and if you think he's the GOAT or not, Tim and I are now in agreement, by the way. Here's the thing. Is what I was so happy for is the fact that his signature win, his win that got him that seventh title that ties Michael Schumacher for all time, right? And make no mistake, he's not stopping at seven.
Mm-hmm.
He's not stopping at seven, but like statistically, we're gonna be like, what was that? Was 2020 the sixth, seventh, eighth, or was it the ninth that he won?
I think we'll remember it as the seventh. I think we'll get confused on
yeah,
eighth,
pretty
ninth,
much.
Tenth. We'll get confused on those. But make absolutely no mistake. he is going to annihilate.
But my thing is, though, is it's beautiful to remember that the one that he tied on was the one that I would say he earned. I would say that was a top three or four victory for Lewis Hamilton, right? It's going to be hard to, like, you know, fight the drama that was Brazil, right? But when you look at races he's won, that has to be one, two, or three. And through sheer racecraft, I'm going to go out on a limb and say that that's number one, baby. That might be the best drive I've ever seen him have.
It was inspired. He turned the intermediates. The intermediates actually turns out have a funny little.
It's not
quirk.
A flaw. It's a feature.
Where it's a feature. Exactly. It's a feature where if you run them long enough, they turn into hypersofts, and very durable hypersofts. And he, again, it's absolutely no coincidence that the guys that were on the top step were the guys that are the best to their tires. And he coaxed the life into him. The team said, come in and pit. He said, no, I think I'm good. And they just let him go. They let him do him. And he didn't set a single foot wrong. He, you know, just that last lap, honestly, when they were showing the shots of that car going around, it was so planted. And every single millimeter was perfect. I genuinely think it was a perfect lap. It wasn't the fastest, but it was a perfect one. And, you know, to see him do that, a statement signature drive for to steal his seventh championship, to tie the all-time record with Michael Schumacher.
Holy cow. I was floored because this wasn't just a win, right? This was a win by 30 plus seconds, all right? And this was a race that, 31.6 seconds in a race in which he started P6, and he didn't even get, you know, close to attempting to pass for the win until the mid-30s, right? I said at work, I said, I think Lewis Hamilton might be the greatest. First off, he's the greatest F1 driver in the world. I believe that at this point, right? But I said at work, I think he's the greatest black athlete in the world. And they're like, you can't say that while LeBron's there. And I'm like, LeBron, I don't think is as dominant as Lewis Hamilton. I'm like, stats work differently, but when you win 50% of the races that you start, he wins 30%, but from the time he's been in F1, he's won 50% of the championships. How's that?
I was going to say, yeah. The statistics and the ratios don't
line up perfectly with like a stick and ball sport, right? But I'm like, if you understood how hard it is, like where the ratio should be and what he ends up doing, there is no athlete in the world right now, even Scott Dixon, right? Scott Dixon can do the same thing, but because of the nature of IndyCar, the door's never really shut, right?
Right.
There is no other dominant force like that. Like, I have never seen another sport, and I cover sports for a living, where a guy wins either in that fashion or in a typical Lewis Hamilton victory, just shuts the door on by like, the equivalent of 30 seconds into the first period, right? Like, I can't put into words the greatness that he is, and I can't articulate that to people who don't know the sport. But it is one of those things where I appreciate the fact that this is one of those moments where I appreciate greatness, right? We always talk about how hard it can be to appreciate greatness. And I appreciate the fact that when I look back at his greatness, I'm not just going to appreciate the doors that he, you know, the times he slammed the door shut on turn one, lap one, like he is wont to do every other race of the season. But I'm going to appreciate this one in which he really showcased his driving skills. He didn't put his foot wrong. He's one of the few drivers who didn't even spin the entire race.
It was beautiful to watch. And you're right. If he's not the greatest black athlete, then I think he is. He is, that's what I would say. He is the most dominant black athlete. And I think I would even take it a step further in saying the most dominant athlete of all time. You know, in any sport, you don't, the ratios, I'm sorry, you don't win half the championships you've ever been in. And you just don't. That doesn't happen anywhere. So, you know, it's just, you know, and I mean, you could say, yeah, well, Lance Armstrong got, you know, seven of his, you know, 11 tours that he did. It's not the same. Like, that's one, that's a 3 week race. That's it. You know, and it's not the world championships. This is the world championship. This is a year long commitment, and this is multiple events in multiple, you know, conditions and a whole lot of things thrown at you. So I just think, yeah, he's the dominant, most dominant sportsman of all time.
And we're gonna, why don't we just bust open that news segment right now while we're talking about Lewis Hamilton? And I don't want this to sound like, oh, you know, Luke and Tim, you know, go out and, you know, shake hands with Lewis Hamilton, form up in a circle and shake our hands together about Lewis Hamilton.
I would.
Right? Like, look, he's statistics don't lie. He's that good.
The statistics don't lie.
You have to pay him his due, regardless of your opinion on him. Regardless of blah, 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 he is the best. So we're going to crack open a little news thing here, which is that, according to members, there's a parliamentary group that has urged the Prime Minister of Great Britain to inform the Queen that she should she chooses, knight Lewis Hamilton and give him the proper title of Sir Lewis Hamilton, which due to his racecraft, the way that he's represented Great Britain in the world motorsport scene, say what you will, but he is giving back as best he knows how. This guy, he deserves it. Look, if there is, I know knighting is a high honor, but what else can you do? Like, Andy,
he deserved it. Bradley Wiggins won the Tour de France for the first time once.
Yeah.
And he got a knighthood. So, no, Lewis Hamilton has more than earned that.
I hope that they can do it before he retires. Like, they'll do it this offseason, fingers crossed. Because then we can have Sir Lewis Hamilton in 2021. How cool would that be to watch a race with Sir Lewis Hamilton? Which, by the way, when my coworkers say there's no way, you know, Lewis Hamilton's the greatest black athlete of all time, I will absolutely pull out, you mean Sir Lewis Hamilton? Because he's a knight. Sir Lewis Hamilton.
Yeah, Sir Lewis.
I
kind of want to say that next year. And just be like, and Sir Lewis has hung his towel on the next championship as well. Because that's kind of what he does.
Here's the thing, too, is I've never encountered an athlete where it's like, oh, well, he's going to win. What do you mean? No, like, this isn't like, oh, you know, the LeBron's going to win the championship. You know, somebody might challenge him, but he's the No, Lewis is going to win in 2021. Don't kid yourselves. Don't make no mistakes. He'll win next year.
No. It's like, hey.
It's only a matter of how long the countdown lasts. Does it take, you know, 12 races? Does it take 15? Well, it sure ain't taking the full 21 or 22 or whatever. Like,
right. It's like, you heard it here first. 2021 championship won by Lewis Hamilton.
Which will be eight. Which will
just
be eight.
Give it up,
and
guys.
I think at the point
it's not
going to
happen.
Eight. I think he's going to see double digits. And he's going to want double digits. And I don't know if he'll reach double digits because Mercedes by 2022, this is a big change in terms of power structure. But give Lewis Hamilton an equal car with everybody else, Lewis Hamilton can probably win as many as he wants. Yeah, most. Yeah, so
most. He'll still win most. If Sunday was evidence of nothing else, it was that, because he took a car from sixth
in a
place
car, mind
and
you,
won by
that Valtteri Bottas,
seconds.
one of the higher end drivers on the field, struggled to control the entire time. He ended up 14th.
And ended up 14th.
So, he shellacked the field in a subpar car. Is what he did.
he did. But we will stop fawning all over Lewis Hamilton, even though he deserves every last bit of it, and head on
AlphaTauri. All you need to know for AlphaTauri is Pierre Gasly described the result as embarrassing with a 12 and a 13. And while I might say that, yes, you know, you didn't have a great car, 12 and 13 in that race for AlphaTauri? Yeah, with that
power unit? I mean, it neutralized power units.
I don't think that's far off of where you guys were going to run, regardless of setup, regardless of weekend. If I have to be that guy,
they're more like a ninth and tenth. Yeah, I think they're consistent point finishers. I mean, you know, Kvyat and Gasly have proven that they can drive the rivets off
just
that car.
With this, I don't know. I feel 12 and 13 isn't anything to write home about. Good. It's also nothing to write home about. Bad. It's kind of a mediocre week, all things considered, for the AlphaTauri, the other bulls. We need to come up with a fun name for them, like the Dead Bulls. No, I think Dead Bulls would be the second seat behind Max Verstappen. But moving on, because that's all there is to say about AlphaTauri. That's it.
That's it. Yeah, we go to France for the Renault team. Which this is actually going nicely. It's 13th, 12th, 11th, 10th, because that's where they finished. Kind of a snoozer of a beyond the initial spinny that Ocon had, which was sad. But he did have a great start. It looks like he's getting more comfortable.
But beyond
in
that car,
which is
not
awesome.
Really much to write home about in terms of Renault. Ocon had that spinny in turn one, but you alluded to this. His start was the best start of anybody. He had a phenomenal start, and I think that's why he was spinny was because of how good his start was. He might have misjudged the amount of, you know, grip he had. He might have had too much speed that he couldn't shed, right? Like, I think his spin was a byproduct of, oh crap, I'm doing really good here, right? Right? I've taken up karting, and that's happened. Yeah. That happened to me once a little while ago, where I had a really good exit on a turn, and I was like, oh, my normal break point was just a little too far back of where I should be, because I was going faster than I anticipated. Whoops. Luckily, it was just a little spin on a track with nobody else on it. But I think that's a similar thing that happened to Esteban Ocon is, wow, I got off to a rocket of a start. And you just completely misjudge what everything is, right? But
everything kind of went
to sacrifice
sideways on
10
you.
11
literally,
Reno is perfectly fine. They got 1 point out of it, and you would have liked to have seen more. But I'm very forgiving this weekend in terms of driving in the rain. Like to finish the race is a good thing
out there. Yeah, just to get there, not bad at all. But it did bring Renault back a little bit. They had to have had a better result, because we've been watching that midfield race. Racing Point had a good one, so they are currently 5 points ahead of McLaren. And to be honest, Daniel Ricciardo had a somewhat anonymous race. He had trouble with grip the whole time. You saw him a lot being kind of getting hassled by cars behind and him losing grip. Specifically, Lando Norris got past him when he started to bang in some of those fastest laps. Just kind of beyond that, rough weekend we're going to do rough turkey edition. As far as turkey edition goes, the turkey standard. Not a bad weekend. They both finished.
Asterisk. Just in time for Thanksgiving, too.
Correct.
Yeah, it's just I don't know if you can ask for much more, right? You can always do better, but the question is, can you ask for better, right? It's at a certain point, yes, you drive and yes, you improve, but at a certain point, it's like that's how the chips fell. Shrug your shoulders and go. We did the best given the circumstances, and I think that's where Renault was. Let's move on to, I would say, one of the most intriguing teams, maybe the most intriguing team of the weekend. One of the three, Tracing Point Martin Aston India Force. Lance Stroll. I am heartbroken.
I was so sad.
I was talking with a guy I know, and he goes, I really don't like Lance Stroll, but I was heartbroken for him. It's like my heartbreak for him superseded my dislike of him.
My hatred. Again, he went out and he built up a great lead. He got off the line well. He started the early stages off well. I think though, he led for 32. But I think where he went wrong was he went too hard and he roasted those tires and you came back out in traffic where you roasted them again. So unfortunately what happened was there was a lot of graining that came on his tires. He wasn't putting a foot wrong. He was pushing really, really hard. He had something like a 15-second gap at one point. And what was really sad was all this graining was happening and it was really starting to lose grip. And they brought him in to get him on fresh rubber, probably two or three laps too late. And then he came back out in traffic and graining came right.
And they said
there
was some unseen damage that Racing Point put out, I think, today, Tuesday, that they said, hey, like, there is some unseen wing damage and stuff that was actually causing this graining on the tires. And they said there's not something we could have seen at the time, but given, you know, fine-tooth comb we had to look at afterwards because we obviously had something wrong, we found it. And to have that thrown away, one of the best qualifying laps I've ever seen, especially from a guy with his pedigree, I would say, not in a derogatory term, but like in a, did you expect that out of Lance Stroll? raise your hand. Now put
it
back down,
coming?
You dirty liar. Lying is a sin. But yeah, I just, your heart has to break for him. He got a P9. And knowing that Checo Perez had a phenomenal weekend really has to hurt, because I think Lance Stroll could have won that darn thing if he didn't have this graining issue. Hands down, no questions asked. I don't think Lewis would have caught up with him, honestly. Checo Perez had a brilliant P2, though. Let's shift over to the happy for Racing Point.
Yeah, as I say, let's shift over to the good side, because Checo, man, if anybody on the grid deserves a good result besides Sebastian Vettel, it's Checo.
It really was. That was his best result, by the way, since 2012. Which sometimes I forget he was around in 2012.
Good for him.
Honest to God. I'm not trying to be a smartass, but it's weird. He is one of those drivers who it's like, right, I feel like he's still just this. He's not a grizzled vet. I feel like he's in that middle stage of his career, but it's like, no, he's. Yes.
He's kind of Nico Hulkenberg-y. He hasn't fulfilled the promises of his early career, and you just kind of forgot how old he was. And then you're like, yeah, it's Nico. He's the heir apparent to. Wait, who's that again? He's not getting a frontline drive.
But Checo Perez. It's not a coincidence that he's been around this long, and he won this race. It was all about seat time. How much? Yeah, P2 or did I say win?
He got P2.
But it's no coincidence that he got P2, right?
He did.
It's all about how long your butt has been in an F1 seat this weekend, and it's exactly why McLaren finished P8 and P5 and Checo Perez finished P2.
He did, and Checo, again, it was down to tire management. He kept his pace, he kept his head, he kept his cool. And he capitalized on a slight overcooking of a turn from one Charlie Leclerc into the final complex of turns. And that was heartbreaking. But we're going to get to that here in a bit. But McLaren, I'm actually kind of thrilled for them. They qualified poorly. They were, I believe, 11th and 13th.
Pulling it up now, Tim.
Or so.
But yeah, they qualified poorly, but they turned it in to a fairly solid result, honestly. Yeah, they qualified, 11 and 13. Yep. But they turned it into a 5-8, though.
Yep. So 11th and 13th. They turned it into a 5-8. And here's the thing that I've noticed about that McLaren throughout the entire season. For some reason, when it gets light on fuel at the end of a race, and it's light on fuel, everything's hot, everything's great, it turns into this otherworldly machine. It really comes alive. And all of a sudden, you see Lando Norris. My favorite thing of the race, beyond, you know, Lewis doing Lewis things, because that was, guys, that's always going to win this weekend. I'm sorry. It's like watching a maestro play a Stradivarius violin in the perfect pitch. And then these other guys, you know, kind of shred on some guitar, you know, do a really cool, like, Metallica riff.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's cool, but it's not the Stradivarius.
It's like when
I'm
you
sorry.
Go to like a sweet punk rock show and you're like, yeah, dude, this is awesome. The guitars are awesome. And then the next night you see like Eddie Van Halen, rest in peace, just like bust out a solo live. And you're just like, I'm sorry. As cool and as fun as that was, that's awesome. We witnessed pretty much perfection this weekend. So there's you can't anything
pretty
else
much
is
perfection.
Even sniffing. But did
we
I just
run out of
him?
Superlative words to describe it? To be honest with you, I went through the dictionary.
Did I just compare Lewis Hamilton
and
to
I think we're out.
Eddie Van Halen?
But
yeah, I did.
Eddie Van Halen, you did. How 2020 is that? I apologize to all the listeners about the banging in the background. That is on my end of the show, and my dog has decided that it'd be a great time to give his best Eddie Van Halen's drummer impression and bang every bone he's got against the piano behind me.
Oh, poor Clarence.
So
the official dog of the formation lap podcast, by the way.
I know. That's correct. The formation
by the way,
lap's
it's,
official
Alex
dog.
Van Halen, if you're curious.
But yeah, no, Alex Van, of course, he's doing his Alex Van Halen impression. But the thing for me that was so cool about Lando Norris's drive was at the end, he banged in like three or four right at the end, three or four fastest laps. He was about 4.5, maybe 4 3/10 seconds up on everybody. And he was just, and he actually was having fun. And they said, Lando, that was really good. And he goes, woohoo! And he's like little Mario, just going around, just doing whatever he wants to do. It was awesome to see. And it was cool to see someone having fun. The inside of that cockpit was dirty as could be, but you knew that he was having fun. Also, for anybody that's curious and wants to go get an F1 TV Pro account, this would be the weekend to watch. Look at all the onboards. Every single driver is just hacksawing their steering wheels as much as humanly possible because those things were everywhere. I was thrilled by the result from McLaren as a team. 5th and 8th, well done. Carlos Sainz was actually always at the front doing really, really well up with Sebastian Vettel, who he is soon to replace. And I'm absolutely certain that Ferrari's actually kind of pretty happy about his result as well, because it shows that he's not too far off of Seb. So their replacement next year, in a year that they are likely to not be competitive as well.
Yeah,
we're going to
spoil our number one, because speaking of Ferrari, we only have two teams left on our rundown, and Red Bull is the next team we got to talk about. We'll get to Ferrari, but prep yourselves for some... Yeah, let's buckle in. Red Bull, both
let's
Verstappen and Albon had a couple of spins, including a huge one for for Max at lap 18. He was going on the inside of Checo Perez, and he just... I know exactly what he did. I've done it in Sims all the time, right? Where, like, you just put the boot down, and you're like, oh, right. Oops. Yep.
Yeah, and it's just
if you don't
a
know
little
what, I
too
am,
much.
What I'm talking about, and you've never done sim racing, just go to a friend who has an iRacing like wheel, pick the Dallara DW12, or whatever the IndyCar model they have there is, just try and pull it out of the pits. Because that's what you're going to do for the first time. Pull it out of the pits at Daytona and you'll lose the back end. And that's what he did going on the inside of Checo Perez.
That is what he did. And unfortunately, and Alex Albon, I think his spin was just because his tires gave up. They were totally roasted and he needed new ones anyway. But I will say that of the two drivers, I believe the cooler head,
I think so too.
I really liked Alex's
performance this week a lot.
I did too. And to be honest with you, Max showed that.
Well, and this is the talk that
matured,
we have every single time with Max, right? Is has he matured? Oh, I think he's matured. And then he goes and calls somebody the R word, and then you know, maybe he's over. He was not the Checo Perez.
He had an entire country demand an apology.
Was due to his own impatience, and that is where it comes from. He had every other corner on that track you can get by somebody on in those conditions, but that one where it's flat out, no son, you have to be mature enough to know. Just keep him in front of me, but this is where I'm going to lose it if I'm going to lose it, you know?
Right. And, you know, it's it's constant disappointment for me because Red Bull has backed him in a big, bad way. And instead of making this inspired driver, this great racing talent, they've created a bit of a bratty monster. When the weekend wasn't going his way, he was, you know, taking the piss out of everybody and saying, "Oh, this is bad. This is bad." On the, you know, on the team radios, he's constantly
talking about Lewis Hamilton, constantly
disrespecting them.
You really, really need to go listen to Max Verstappen bitch on the radio.
Not like Max. Holy mother of God, it's bad with Max. The other thing about Max that really sent me over the edge was after the race. And someone, you know, asked, you know, because everybody needed to say something good about Lewis. That's just the custom now. You know, Seb, one of his greatest rivals said, you know, he's the greatest of our generation, period. End of story. And Max said, well, statistically, he seems like he's the best driver. Yeah. And he somehow, somewhere in his core, has this pure belief that he is a better driver. And
here's one thing too, you can believe that, right? You're a professional athlete. You can believe that you're a better driver. But here's where the child comes in is, and I always talk about PR, right? When I'm asked as a Cardinals fan, my opinion on the Cubs, I'm not going to go, "Oh, boo the Cubs," right? I'm going to go, "Well, no, they're a pretty well-run organization. And here's the thing, it's blah, blah, blah." You know, Sebastian Vettel, dire rival with Lewis Hamilton for years, right? You know what he did the second the race was over? I mean the second. The first man to congratulate Lewis Hamilton on his historic achievement was his rival in Sebastian Vettel. Vettel hopped out of the car, beelined towards Lewis Hamilton. Right.
He was the first one to congratulate him.
You have to realize that I think I'm a better driver can, you know, go on over in one side of your mind. But when you're asked something, especially, it's not like he won his sixth, right? He won his seventh, and that is a much more important number, a much more historic day than what happened last year. That is when you have to give, and I hate generic PR speak, you have to give the generic PR, he's the best ever. I don't care if you think you're better. You say what you have to say.
You know, it's just... Yeah, and I think it was part of his when Max gets disappointed, the curtain gets pulled open pretty hard to show just how immature he is and just how petulant and bratty and just aggressively dickish he is. And, you know, it's just on full display. And when qualifying didn't go his way, it's not that, well, that's racing. I guess I got to turn in a good response tomorrow. It's, you know, oh, we have to see what was wrong and blah, blah, blah. And this isn't fair and that isn't fair. And he turns very, very petulant, and it just drives me insane. I cannot stand him as a driver. Is he at Santino Ferrucci levels for me yet? No, but
is he?
You know,
No,
and you know, it's not like when you lost fans. Because that's the other funny thing about Seb for me, is that he lost so many fans when he took on Mark Webber at Red Bull, and he was seen as the evil guy on the grid just for not letting Mark Webber win. And now he's like the saintly uncle that you love. And now we've got Max Verstappen, who's arguably
a monster, but he's probably the biggest villain-esque.
No, villain. He's much more of a villain. He's a heel. He's the heel for the grid. And you know, to see that, it's like, hey guys, there's another Red Bull driver we might want to take the Mickey out of for a bit, because
we'll move on to the final team. The winners of today, by our weird system of measurement, admittedly, Ferrari with a 3-4.
Ferrari, what?
3-4, yeah.
Did you see that? No, 2-3 or 3-4, yeah. You're right. Sorry, 3-4.
Almost.
Seb was 3. Yeah, Charles Leclerc was 4. Kind of heartbreaking. Charles had put on a storming drive and had come charging through the field and actually was doing really, really well until he overcooked it going into the last series of corners.
One of the best sequences of corners. Maybe not in terms of like it's not as visually fantastic as Eau Rouge, but that is the best place for racing anywhere on any F1 calendar. I swear to God, it is so good.
And we just saw why. Because he cooked it going into it, and Checo, who was immediately followed by Seb, passed him. And it was just like, it's the last lap!
Checker, oh my God.
Oh my God! Yeah, and it's just like this. It was just absolutely brilliant. It was great for Seb. Seb had he benefited from just what was an otherworldly start. You know, the start that you would expect from a 4-time champ. And he just kind of made it stick the rest of the race. And capitalized. He had some setbacks here and there, but he capitalized on the mistake of his younger teammate. And here's the thing I love about Charles Leclerc, where I hate about Max Verstappen. Charles Leclerc on team radio completely took ownership and said, I overcooked it. That was my fault. And his team guy said, that was good. He goes, no, that wasn't good. That was awful. I'm paraphrasing because he cursed his head off. But he's, you know, that was blank. That was blank. I am so blanking stupid. Just like Baku.
He did that in Germany,
it's like, I'm
too,
so sorry to the team. I've let you all down.
He's really hard on himself.
Congratulations
to Seb.
Yeah, he did.
But he does. He took ownership of it really quickly, which is fantastic. And he congratulated Seb. I don't think Verstappen would not congratulate Albon. I don't feel like
he can. Yeah, that was classy. No, that was, well, I mean, you saw it in Monaco when Max crashed in and wasn't able to qualify, and Daniel took the trophy. He didn't want to congratulate Daniel. He just went to his room, and Christian Horner actually had to go get him and say, hey, go say hi to your teammate. He goes, yeah, okay. Like a child. Whereas Charles Leclerc, you know, I think what it comes down to for me is that for those two guys, it's completely different, where for Max, failure is external, success is internal. Charles, success is external, failure is internal. So he takes ownership of failures on his own and congratulates and can show class and sportsmanship. He's a good sportsman. So that was great to see. That was a good moment of maturity, but he just didn't have the experience to know where to put that car going into that complex, and the two grizzly vets took advantage of him. It was kind of rough, but I loved it because I was elated. It was the first time since Mexico 2019 that Seb has been on the podium. And after the year he's had,
how fitting is it?
Good on him. You know, I know that in
on the podium.
Go ahead.
For Lewis's 7, it was a beautiful moment. There were a lot of beautiful moments at the end, but I think it was Seb got to be there for him, knowing that the rival that they were. But Seb looked and was, to my eyes, absolutely elated for Lewis Hamilton to know that, and it was one of those moments where, you know, in hockey, you beat the tar out of each other on the ice, borderline attempt to kill a man, but at the end of the game, you go and shake hands, and the guy that you just attempted to kill you, you go, man, you almost got me that couple times. That was a hell of a game, hell of a match, right? That is, I loved what that represented. Yeah. So for GG. Charles to Bennett and allow Seb to get on the podium was a very heartwarming. Well, not that he intentionally did it, but for Seb to be on the podium was very heartwarming for me. Warmed my cockles.
Right. Yeah, it was. I loved it. Yeah, it warms the cold, dead heart that 2020 has given us. But Luke, I think we'll do something different this week that I haven't talked to you about, and I don't know how you're going to react to it.
Ooh, grade the sandwich.
Let's grade this sandwich.
So the sandwich is comprised of several parts. You got your bread, you got your bacon, you got your lettuce, you got your tomato, right? And for a good sandwich to be good, all of those things have to be considered, right? Whereas an unpredictable winner, you know, might be some high quality bacon, right? There's some bread and some lettuce and some tomato that you got to factor in there too that make up for a lack of bacon, arguably. I should have chose lettuce because if you're short on the lettuce, who cares? As long as the bacon's good. That being said, when you look at this entire sandwich from the storylines, from Seb Vettel getting to stand on the podium with Lewis Hamilton, from the absolute he took the seventh championship.
When he took the seventh championship.
Mm-hmm. When you look
and he tied the childhood the absolute idol of Sebastian Vettel
required to have won that race, right? When you look at the wildly unpredictable but also in thoroughly entertaining qualification, right? When you look at all of these externalities, the race might just be the bacon, and the bacon's the most important part of a BLT. Hot damn, the lettuce and tomatoes and the bread were really good. I'm giving it an A, maybe an A+.
I'm going to give it an A as well. It's not, for me, Brazil last year was the A+. This wasn't quite Brazil, where you had all that upset. But
I can't even fault it
pretty
for
damn
being...
good. I'm gonna say A as well.
Right? Usually a Lewis Hamilton win by 30 seconds, I'm looking at max a B-, right?
No.
But for that to win, for the events to unfold in the way that they did, and Lewis Hamilton wins, completely wipes out the fact that the winner was Lewis. Not to hate on Lewis, but I just don't like predictability. That's
Lewis. One of- right.
Yeah.
It was, but that was a that was, hard was, fought, hard hard
it was warm in my cockles and like signature. Three win, maybe the number one win of his career in terms of just absolutely showing his driving and dominance. Tim, we have two news stories and we can get through these pretty quick, I believe. So
yeah,
number one, Aston Martin and Mercedes.
Yes, let's do it.
Tim Merton over on the on the other side of this call here. Aston Martin and Mercedes will share safety car duties in 2021, according to Autosport. Nothing penned yet, but that's what it looks like. That a revised deal for 2021 will cease giving Mercedes the sole safety car rights and instead let Aston Martin join safety car responsibilities in like a 50-50 split. This comes as Aston Martin... Mercedes and Aston Martin have become increasingly buddy-buddy over the last year or so. They reached deals on like shareholding agreements, technical cooperation. Mercedes increased, has like a 20% stake now in Aston Martin. And this just seems like a match made in heaven. And if you're Papa Stroll and you own Aston Martin, this sounds like a fantastic way to ingrain yourself into the F1 community and also get your logo slapped everywhere and maybe add a little legitimacy to a car company that's been struggling.
Yeah. Yeah, I completely agree. It's brilliant marketing. And since Mercedes is now invested in the success of Aston Martin and, you know, Aston Martin is trying to take a bigger... step.
That's the interesting thing, is it's a win-win.
Yeah, that's
because
what
you might say, well, Mercedes can't be happy about that. No, Mercedes owns 20% of Aston Martin. So when Aston Martin is out on the track, they're also making money. So it's a win-win, great advertising opportunity. I think that not that Aston Martin didn't have credibility before, but it's really going to ingrain into the F1 fan base at large, right? Because it's not like... It's not like when like a Renault Clio, having like a Renault Clio as the pace car, people are like, are you kidding me with that? Right? Really? It's an Aston Martin. It's a legitimate sports car that's quick. You know, it looks good like a pace car should.
Yes. It's a luxury sports car. And the thing about Formula One is that it attracts
eyes of people who have the income to do that. Other eyes.
No. We are more the unworthy urchins that get to behold this great behemoth of a sport. I know Lamborghini and Ferrari don't put an ounce into print or commercial advertising because their approach is that their clientele and their client base aren't at home watching TV. This is the exception. There's just an exception to every rule, which is why Ferrari
it seems
is
like a
racing.
Win-win for all sides, and I think I'll enjoy seeing an Aston Martin, probably a Vanquish on there? Probably a Vanquish. It'll be beautiful.
Probably a Vanquish or a DB9, something like that.
It'll be a custom-built one because the current Mercedes pace car tops out at 198 miles per hour. And if you put it in a touring car race, it would probably win. Burt Mylander wheels that thing. So whatever the new Aston Martin pace car will be, it'll be custom-built because it has to be because it is blisteringly fast. It only looks like it goes slow because...
Oh, you know what they're going to use as the pace car? I'll bet you $5 right now.
There you go. How did I?
They're going to use the new Valkyrie. Yep.
Oh, it's
and
a match made.
Red
in
Bull
heaven.
Will be on board because Adrian Newey designed it.
Over under times Martin Brundleman.
Yeah, this is that's
Valkyrie,
that, there's your safety car
is designed
done
by Adrian Newey while it's out on the track. Over under 7 times next season. Over. Yeah. Every time it's on the track. Any session.
Every time.
Gets an Adrian Newey. Here comes.
Every time it's on the track.
Shoot, when it comes out, it's like, and there's the Adrian Newey designed car coming out for the safety car. It'll just become known as the Adrian Newey car.
Did you know that this was designed by Adrian Newey? Very, shut up, Aunt Martin. Yeah. And it'll also become the newest line from Martin Brundle that we all expect him to say, like, oh, tell me more, Martin. Is he driving
Claire
into a disappearing wedge?
Claire's him right now. It's fantastic. Official dog of the Formation Lap. He's a pesky.
Yeah, he's quite upset.
Scruffy.
Right,
but scruffy, feisty, lovable. That's what we
feisty.
Have. Speaking of lovability, not Fernando Alonso, who's our next news story. Jenson Button believes that Fernando Alonso will, quote, be very different upon returning to F1 in 2020 and be a better team player thanks to his experience in sports car racing. Tim, would you like to read the quote?
Yes, I would. Jenson, Kimi got away from F1 and spent a few years away and realized how good F1 is. That's why they go back, and that's why Fernando is going back. It's definitely helped him, and Fernando will come back a better driver as well, I think. Whether he's more skilled as a racing driver, if it's the way he works with the team, I think it's going to be very different. It will be interesting to see, because the Fernando from 4 years ago or 3 years ago, you wouldn't want in your team. But now I think he's much more of a team player and understands that it is necessary to succeed. The fact that he needed a break away from F1 to realize that. But it's the same thing that we've been saying, all along, that Fernando is not
a
team guy.
Where being in touring cars, being in endurance racing, you have to realize it.
He did have to do...
Yeah. All of that
endurance racing,
is
the Dakar.
A lot of team cooperation, especially endurance racing, especially the WEC, the Rolex 24, right? Dakar... is tough, and it's a tough navigational thing, right? But the team that you have in endurance racing is many times more important than any driver difference you have, right? Give me a better team over, like, you know, a slightly better driver any day. And I think that learning that might have been something he does. I don't know how well you learn at 40 whatever years old he is. Not that you can't learn at that age, but if you're an athlete, that's pretty late in your career to be learning that. I think he's onto something. I think that it's kind of well known that, yep, like, yeah, you don't want him on your team if he's the old guy. And I think Renault might know that. I don't think Cyril Abitbol is smart enough to know that, but I wouldn't be shocked if Jenson Button's right on the money here, that he's a much more of a team player now.
And with the experiences he's had at Toyota, at, you know, the Dakar, and IndyCar, I think, yeah, he's absolutely right. He's probably seen the value of a team, and...
So, Tim, one more point of order. We have the imaginary wall of fame back here. Is it time to retire Lewis Hamilton onto the wall of fame?
Yes.
Specifically, Lewis Hamilton, so he, A, can't win any more people's champions, right? Because he's Lewis Hamilton, right? There's only so many times we can congratulate him again. Is it time to retire him? Or shall we wait? Time to retire him. So congratulations to Lewis Hamilton.
No, it's time to retire.
Well done. Well done. It's well past
congratulations.
Time, honestly. I'm shocked it's taken him this long to be considered for knighthood, if I'm being real with you. So, Tim, next week, next Thursday is Thanksgiving.
That's true.
Here in the States. I was going to say, hey, let's take the week off after Thanksgiving.
Yes.
But we can't. Thanksgiving weekend, there's a race in Bahrain. Bahrain 1, specifically. So, Tim, I'm going to propose to you that instead of recording on the Monday before the Thanksgiving, we take off next week and we come right back with Bahrain. Does that sound every good for you? Lovely little break. Again,
I think
it's
that is
Thanksgiving
a lovely,
here in the States, which is
lovely
one
little
of the
break.
Bigger holidays for us. So, in Thanksgiving spirit, I would like to say that I'm thankful for all of our listeners, to all of you guys who listen to us ramble on and on about motorsports that interest us. Tim, what are you thankful for? The opportunity is nice.
The opportunity
too, so,
to have people listen to us about motorsports.
On that, heartwarming, cackle-warming...
it is.
My cackles a lot today. You know, they're sitting a little awkward.
This is
chair,
there's
so
a lot of cackling.
They're naturally warming up against my leg. The only cackle warming note, I would like to bid you all adieu. Yeah, let me adjust my cackles here.